Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, this is Pablo Zabaleta.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Kevin Phillips.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. Look, I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios keep us on the road. This independent podcast simply wouldn't happen without them. Please head to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now. Join us, become a socio, a member, and you'll get extra big interview content every month, plus lots of bonuses. We need you. We can't do this without you.
From Backpage, I'm Neil White, and this is the big interview at the World Cup. For the next month and a bit, the podcast will be coming direct from Russia on an almost daily basis. Our man Graham Hunter is already in Krasnodar, base camp for the Spain team, who he'll be following for the duration of their tournament, and he joins us now. Graham of Privyet.
Well, what you could do to bridge the gap is you could explain what the Russian for WTF is with a question mark and an exclamation at the end, and then we'd be, you know, communing.
So, in general, these World Cup shows are going to be a little different from our usual podcasts if you're listening to the big interview on a regular basis. Graham, can you say a little about what we're trying to achieve while you're over there?
Well, I guess while writing, podcasting, one of the things we've discovered is that your and Martin's suspicion that people like to see behind the scenes, that people want to know how not just tournaments work, we're at a tournament right now, but how the life of a footballer works, the things that the listeners don't always imagine or haven't had experience of. I think we're all well aware, Neil, too, that, you know, the privilege of our job, the three of us, maybe mine particularly, because I get sent to the coalface more often, is pretty privileged. And it's one of the things that has been a topic of conversation with people who do my kind of work around this tournament since we arrived. That the privilege is huge. We'll touch on these things a little bit later, but to arrive in Moscow, to be picked up by not a chauffeur, but a driver, shown round the Russian capital, and then dumped off in a perfectly pleasant hotel. These are things that, if you're kind of follow the World Cup via desperately slogging your way through the metro or a bus or a train to get to work, doing your 8 hours, and then hurrying home to see whatever, you know, Saudi Arabia, Russia on the box, you dream of the type of access or privilege that I get. And a tournament is not simply composed of the matches. It just isn't. How do teams get prepared to win? What experience do the fans have? What is the particular idiosyncratic nature of the country where the tournament is being staged? So having set all those ideas out and admitted that, you know, we're in a very lucky position to be able to describe a lot of those things, the concept was to have a podcast from principally Spain's vista of the tournament most days in order to say, well, this is what you aren't seeing and this is what explains the mood in the Spanish press, or this is what... you won't have seen the mood of the Spanish squad is, or what their travel is like. Or in this instance, I'm trying to set the scene a little bit for what for many of our listeners will be a very faraway nation with a very different, unusual culture. And in short, we wanted to take people inside the tournament.
That's right. And over the course of the tournament, I hope these shows are going to have a bit of variance. Sometimes it will be Graham and I chatting away like this. Sometimes Graham will be recording things on location as he roams around with Spain. And sometimes, hopefully, he'll be able to grab a guest or two to get another perspective on what's happening in Russia this summer. Today, for the first of these shows, we wanted to focus on the training camp. Let's talk in a bit about how and why these teams end up in these particular bases. First, you're going to be living in the city of Krasnodar for the next few weeks at least. The place, is going to be a regular part of these podcasts, I guess. So tell us a bit about where you are.
Yeah, I can't tell you a great deal. I can give you enough of a starter pack because that's all I have. What is important and what I can answer on is that this really interesting town, which feels like arriving in a Detroit or a Chicago or Middle America, because of the way it's designed, because of the feel of the houses and the backyards and the big brown river that flows through the middle of the city. And we're in the south because it's somewhere that is pretty warm. Spain is a group of players who don't want to be training in sweltering heat every day, but what they do really like is to try and mimic summer conditions back home in Spain. They didn't enjoy the Brazil feeling of living down in the dank south, where it felt very like a sort of snotty Northern European autumn, and therefore not much fun, and then having to fly up to blistering heat in the north of Brazil. So in this instance, Krasnodar is down by near enough Sochi, where the Winter Olympics were held. It's starting to come into territory that many Russians regard as holiday territory, because the further south you go in this country, the more likely it is that you're going to get nice hot sunshine. It's quite a well-equipped city, and probably one of the things that I'm guessing influenced them a great deal, Neil, was one of the hard luck stories of the World Cup, in that Krasnodar is a city with their own type of Roman Abramovich, who's Sergei Galitsky, and he owns FC Krasnodar. This city is big enough and the sporting facilities are good enough that many people genuinely expected it to be a host city. It isn't. That's strange. I can't comment on why, what the politics was behind that. But what got left behind was the structure of a city which is used to being in love with football. FC Krasnodar is on the rise. Galitsky, who made his money through a supermarket chain, very similarly to the Roig family that owns Villarreal, for example. In fact, maybe the Villarreal comparison for those who followed the Yellow Submarine, the way in which Roig's supermarket and ceramics money has allowed him to say, I want to take this team that's training in a public park and I'm going to take it to, you know, the a win at the Bernabeu this season, the brink of the European Cup final in 2006, so on and so forth. So the Galitsky comparison to Roig, I think, is reasonable. And what he's built, because he's absolutely dedicated, again, like Villarreal, to an academy, to making sure that local kids can train. Clearly what he's going to do is he's going to bring in hired gun professionals from afar in order to try and bolster the team. But initially, there is an idea that the local region should be encouraged to supply talent, and therefore there's a very big, very modern training complex and a very impressive pair of stadiums, one of which is the B team stadium that won't be in use on the 9th when Spain played their second of two warm-up friendlies. And I think it's pretty unusual, not unheard of, but it is unusual for a team to play their warm-up friendly in the competition country. But to me, from a distance, it seems smart. So what I can tell you, having arrived here late last night, is that the airport, as you say, Krasnodar is going to become a familiar name for people listening to this podcast. The airport for a team that's participating in the World Cup and not living in one of the host cities is clearly absolutely vital. It needs to function. It needs to have a big enough runway. It needs to be modern, professional, quick. It needs to have a terminal whereby VIPs can come in and out without having to cross swords with locals or tourists, etc. And Krasnodar Airport passed that test. It isn't like South Africa 8 years ago where they had to commandeer an ex-military base and challenge the local ANC mayor to invest, you know, I don't know, six-figure sum in making the runway better and therefore Spain could fly in and out on its, you know, big plane as it nicked around Durban and Cape Town and so on and so forth. So Krasnodar has these things, Neil. It's a pretty big, international, popular city with a nice climate, good training facilities. What's not to like? And this is entirely off the record, and hopefully nobody's listening. But with any luck, we'll also find that Krasnodar is a city with a sports bar that is showing the Rugby League State of Origin game, first of three, which is being played today. And given that my cameraman is an absolute maniac about the State of Origin game, Krasnodar has its first test in a sporting sense long before La Roja arrives here, which is, just for information, on Wednesday evening.
Okay, listeners, I'm sure we'll revisit the State of Origin game. Let's find out what happened the next time we speak to...
Up the Blues!
The next time we speak to Graham. You also mentioned Saturday's friendly. Spain are playing Tunisia, obviously in England's group. A match that you'll be attending, correct?
Yeah, it's again, maybe you'll tell me off after we finish recording this that was too much detail. But like little things, like it's an interesting challenge in that that game doesn't fall under the ambit of the World Cup. So your FIFA accreditation isn't enough to get you in to make sure you can go meet the players or get backstage afterwards, blah, blah, blah. So we have to work out directly with Spain. So Spain are the authorities about accreditation, about who gets in and who doesn't, even though it's being played in Russia. It'll be broadcast. I don't know if... I have a feeling that Sky are showing it, but I know that Mediaset, which is Telecinco and Deportes Cuatro in Spain, they're showing this game live. So we'll go to that game, Spain-Tunisia. Listen, all of you sitting at home will know that Tunisia have been picked because there's an idea that they might match the playing style of Morocco. I'm not entirely sure that that's necessarily going to be true, but the idea to play Switzerland the other day in what was a pretty one-paced, friendly 1-1 draw was that Switzerland had been in Portugal's group and had run Portugal really tight for qualification, and therefore there was some idea that it was a suck-and-see idea against the Swiss. No injuries, played in Villarreal Stadium, the old Madrigal Ceramica Stadium, as it's called now. No injuries, which is good. Costa still looking a little bit sluggish. Rodrigo coming on, not really turning things his way. Iniesta taking a couple of rough challenges, just as he did 8 years ago against the Swiss when he missed the second game in the group against Honduras that they had to win to stay in the tournament. So a reasonable exercise, certainly. Spain created all the really good chances, scored. And Odriozola is this flying right back from Athletic Bilbao who got his debut goal. Is a real fun player to watch in an attacking sense. He's quite slight and I think has something to learn defensively, but he's in the tournament ahead of Sergio Roberto. So I know that Sergio Roberto's got so much affection from people who listen to our work or read what I write that Odriozola will have the focus on him until, for example, it's proven that Dani Carvajal has recuperated from that strain that he incurred in Kiev against Liverpool. And his goal was a lovely right-footed volley that I'm sure you'd have been proud of scoring yourself.
Why, thank you. Interesting, just reversing a little bit, snapshot of the football situation in Krasnodar. You mentioned FC Krasnodar, very much the new money. Couple of appearances in the Europa League. There's also Kuban Krasnodar, the old money, almost 100 years older than FC Krasnodar.
The whole idea about old money, new money, one of the things about FC Krasnodar is it feels to me as if perhaps there's some degree of resentment that it's not necessarily made particularly easy for them to accelerate their progress. via money. I'll tell you about the training ground. I'll tell you about the stadium when I've been there. But having looked at it and studied it, it reminds me a little bit of the stadium in Durban. People who have worked in and around it said it's very, very good. Again, if I'm not wrong, I'm pretty sure that Krasnodar played Real Madrid in the Youth League. And I know there's a disappointment in this city. The Spanish flags are plastered everywhere because the team is going to train here. From previous experience, I know that whether the supporters in the city are new money or old money supporters, they're going to clamour to see Spain. There will be open days. The fact that the Tunisia match is here is being heavily, heavily publicised. I think the tickets are relatively affordable to get in there on the 9th. But, O'Neill, the impact on me about the short spell in Krasnodar and the evident interest in having a former world champion domiciled here is something that echoes what I've felt since I've been in Moscow. Predominantly, the host country really gets into it, really enjoys it. And with the increasing spread of football tourism as an idea, which I first really began to notice in 2006, that vast swathes of people whose country hadn't qualified would come and base themselves in Frankfurt or Munich or Hamburg to see 2-3 games. Or swathes of people from New Zealand might be following France round the tournament. That element of football tourism, not the one that gets decried and slagged off with, prawn sandwich brigade. People from all around the world who genuinely just flood towards what they hope to be a carnival of football. That element I've noticed and I've quite enjoyed, I have to say, and it's a cultural difference from when I began to follow football. In Brazil, you didn't get that. That's what I'm building to about my feelings so far, particularly from Moscow and travelling to Krasnodar. In Brazil, you know that the stories that everybody heard or read or saw on the television, and maybe some people listening to this podcast were in Brazil. Right across Brazil, there was a very heavy level of people who didn't want the tournament simply because they wanted government money invested in predominantly schools and medicine and hospitals. That wasn't the only feeling. There were many Brazilians who partied, who enjoyed, and so on. But I saw protests. I saw the fact that there needed to be cops and army getting in the way of staged protests. And here, all I can tell you is that there's this gigantic pride that Russia is hosting this tournament. That the vast number of people I've met and spoken to have been just brimful of please like us, please enjoy us. Don't you think that this is good or that is good or the next thing? And so far, that isn't yet cloying or saccharine to me. I'm really enjoying it.
Okay, we're going to take a little break now, listeners. When we come back, some lessons from the past about the importance of training camps, probably more than you think. But first, do you know what Krasnodar means?
Surprise me.
Graham Hunter, proud Aberdeen fan, you are staying in the city known as Gift of the Reds.
Yo! You and your Black Sea Cossacks. I tell you what. And is that to do with the October Revolution or to do with Catherine the Great?
It goes back to Catherine the Great. Very good. Extra bonus points for your history.
Great, Catherine. Great work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Graham, we were talking about the importance of the World Cup training camps, and I know the science behind Spain's selection of these places that you've observed from your time following these teams through these tournaments.
They won the tournament in Austria, Switzerland. They won the tournament in Ukraine, Poland as well. But the intensity of South Africa, the fact that it was winter time. I'm going to say Potchefstroom, which is a university town where you will often see Northwestern University hosting one-day cricket, for example. It's a typical, I would say, Afrikaans town whereby clearly the university itself is very diverse, but it would be about an hour and 20 minutes of a drive west from Joburg. And it was there that they set up a camp that was vital in that they could work out their kinks, that they could work out their worries, having lost the first game. They were isolated. They felt that it was a proper home. The residence was right on the training pitch. And therefore, Potch probably gave them everything they needed, because it was a lovely, gentle town whereby Andres and Iniesta could wander off out the main gates of the training ground, wander down to the shopping centre and buy his CDs to listen to different kinds of music. That's kind of laid back for a World Cup. But I know that what you're fishing for is that Spain get very, very, very intense about the quality of the pitch. Things have changed. There's no point in lying, Neil. Xavi's not here anymore. So that alters things a little bit, because Xavi was a pitch fascist.
There are worse kinds of fascism than pitch fascism.
From 100 metres, he could tell you to within a fifth of a millimetre what length the blades of grass were. And as such, Spain always want, number one, to have a training complex where what they work on, whether it be fitness, whether it be defending, whether it be set plays, whether it be rondos, that all of it is produced on, you know, a surface upon which you could play billiards brilliantly. Now, let's see whether Krasnodar have supplied that, but there have been technicians from the Spanish Federation here for a long time, trying to make sure that there are no mishaps that there were in Austria, when the snows lasted so long that the pitches were very nearly not constructed in time for that tournament. Mishaps like in South Africa when the rains were so heavy just prior to the tournament that the pitch was very nearly washed away, and sandbags, emergency sandbags, had to be plugged in and installed all around the training complex in Potch so that the local river didn't literally sweep away Spain's chances of winning that World Cup. So in this instance, the other part of the equation you're hinting at is that Spain don't want to travel far between where they live and their daily training. They want little details like the absolute minimum time that the Spain Federation can have their players in a coach, for example, traveling to and from anywhere, whether it be the airport, whether it be the training ground, whether it be an excursion, of which I don't know if there are any this time, but there have been in previous tournaments. And it's also true that they want to have the team hotel in the venue, like, so the first three venues for Spain will be Sochi, which is a 35-minute flight away, and Kazan and Kaliningrad. And each team obviously has the choice of one of two team hotels when they get to the match venue. And Spain will always try to pick the hotel where there's the least travelling from there to the kickoff point. So these are some of the criteria that Spain like about the training complex. And if I'm not mistaken, Spain are going to be staying pretty much on the training ground, which they did in Poch, which they did in Nowino in Poland. It was different in Innsbruck, and they had a little bit of travel, which they found acceptable. But really what they like to do is to get up, go downstairs, have their breakfast, get changed, and wander down the steps in their boots into the training complex, onto the pitch. And it might sound hoity-toity, it might sound pedantic, but they believe that over their golden spell of winning three straight tournaments, which is unprecedented, that if you get a mountain of little details like those right, your chances of lifting the trophy augment.
The PR campaign, or the connection between Spain and their base that you mentioned kind of briefly earlier, is something they seem to get right almost every time. I was thinking about the charming children that came and did their little dance.
In Innsbruck.
In 2008 in Innsbruck, exactly.
You're only saying that to take the piss out of me. It's true, and it made me laugh at the time. There was an Oompa band, and everybody was dressed like the Sound of Music, and Manolo El Del Bombo, the big Spanish drummer, was there. And the guys who were the youngest in that squad were kind of standing around chewing gum and giggling and sort of not quite pointing at the Tyrolean children and their feathers and their felt hats and their lederhosen. It just was quite an odd scenario to watch. It was two very different cultures. I don't think kind of anybody really knew how to handle that, but it looked pretty. It sounded nice. It didn't go on too long. For the life of me, I can't remember. There was an incident where did the local Austrian children get taught how to sing the nursery rhyme Veo Veo? Oh, that was brilliant. It was so nice. And at that point, again, I'm improvising. So if anybody's mad enough to go and reread the Spain book, they'll probably tell me I've got all the names wrong. But at that point, I'm pretty sure the team leaders like Xavi or whoever, you know, really went and applauded them and said that was absolutely brilliant and the ice was well and truly broken. As a group, or, you know, obviously these are now quite distinct groups between 2008 and today, but like predominantly they're really quite nice guys. Take a strip away the salaries, strip away the fame, even strip away the talent with the ball. And they're decent people, often very funny, likeable, very family oriented. And therefore, generally, although if you didn't say to them, go and interact or have a ceremony or, you know, sign autographs, they would kick around and find something else to do. There have been quite a few players who get charmed by this and who actively go out of their way to make contact and to be friendly, to be nice, one example is Fernando Torres reading up about South Africa and apartheid before going to the tournament and then taking time, even though he was having a really difficult experience with his knee, his form wasn't right, he knew he was being questioned in the media, it wasn't a particularly fulfilling experience for him in a football sense, despite helping make the goal to win the final. He just spent hour after hour pleasing locals with photos and autographs in terms of being the nicest guy you could possibly hope to meet. And there have been a few over the tournaments who've behaved like that. And so why is it successful? Is it in the national character? Is it to do with the National Association, how they plan it? There's a woman called Sylvia who's been general manager, you know, born in Mönchengladbach, but you know, she's a Spaniard by family and she's been at the Federation now for years. She's very good at making sure that a tournament is well run, well planned, and pleasing or making friends with the locals is part of her remit, and she does it well. But the players need to enforce it, and they do, because they're not bad chaps.
And those not bad chaps arrive where you are tomorrow. Say hello when they do. In the meantime, you and I will be chatting tomorrow when I'll have some World Cup preview questions from our socios from patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Let's focus on Spain's World Cup, but anything across the tournament in general, I'm sure Graham will field your questions. Until then, from Krasnodar, Russia, Graham Hunter, thank you, and dosvidanya.
Dosvidanya. I really hope you're enjoying these World Cup shows. We've got huge plans for next season, but we do need your help to make them happen. Go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter right now to become a socio, a member, to join us, to support us. You'll get an extra big interview every month, plus lots of other bonus content. Last season, our members got 9 exclusive big interviews, including Rafa van der Vaart, Troy Deeney, and Roberto Di Matteo. So go to patreon.com bit.ly/GrahamHunter. Do it now, please.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. The twigs and leaves in your yard aren't exactly comfortable. And while mud does perfectly contour the feet, it doesn't score high on the durability front. But thanks to Allbirds, you can skip all the backyard experimentation. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural, sustainable materials. And their innovative processes mean using less of the bad stuff and more of the good, while making shoes unlike any other. Like the Plant Pacer, made with 100% plastic-free plant leather. The Tree Dasher, a running shoe made from eucalyptus tree fiber. And from Sugarcane, they've made the Superlight, their lightest shoe ever by weight and carbon footprint. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.